Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, July 13th, 2017. We'll start with a story titled Signs Direct People to Property Owners, written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. The city has placed about 220 white signs with black lettering on them at lots that the city doesn't own, letting neighbors and those who travel by the tall grass know the lots are privately owned and not city maintained. These signs also direct people to find property owner information on the city's website at cityofdanville.org/propertyinfo.html. According to the city's website, the city does not cut grass on private property unless the lot is on a main roadway with more than a 5,000 average daily traffic count, or if it is a corner lot creating a driving hazard. The city encourages you to reach out to the private owner, property owners who are not maintaining their properties. Property owner information can be found here, where a link is provided by zooming into a property and clicking on the property. The city's website includes a map where someone can zoom in on a non-city-owned property that's on the city's MO list and find information. By clicking on a property, it will tell the property owner. These are privately owned lots, said Danville Engineering and Urban Services Director David Schnell. The city council was stating it was not interested in spending taxpayer dollars on mowing lots not owned by the city, he said. We are on some of the main corridors, still mowing some of those lots, Schnell said. There could be situations where a property owner is deceased and a property is on a bank's hands. There could be out-of-state property owners or other reasons a property isn't being regularly maintained. In some cases, neighbors and neighborhood associations have stepped up to mow, Mayor Scott Eisenhower said. Eisenhower said the city signs include a website that people will be able to go to and find the owner of each of those properties, and that way, if the neighbors want to take it upon themselves to contact those owners or put some heat on the owners to try to get something done, they'll have the information necessary to do that. He said the city's inspection division continues to write tickets for tall grass, send letters, and take people to court. The city may or may not see fines and fees paid or find someone to cut the overgrown grass. Some of the lots are owned by the Vermilion County trustee to be sold. Vermilion County Treasurer Darren Duncan said the properties are held by the trustee when someone hasn't paid their taxes for 3 years, but he said the properties are still owned by the previous owners until the properties go to auction. The trustee goes through court to request a tax deed. The treasurer or tax collector is responsible for this tax sale, Duncan said. If no one invests in those taxes, the properties go to the surplus. And there's a picture of a sign on non-city-owned lot on Payne Street that the city isn't mowing this year. Okay, finish that out. I lost my spot there, the page break there. Vermilion County Treasurer Darren Duncan said the properties are held by the trustee when someone hasn't paid their taxes for 3 years, but he said the properties are still owned by the previous owners until the properties go to auction. The trustee goes through court to request the deed. The treasurer or tax collector is responsible for the tax sale, Duncan said. If no one invests in those taxes, the properties go to the surplus auction. The next auction is at the end of August. The minimum bid is $639 for a property. Eisenhower said the difficult position the Vermilion County trustee is in, doesn't want to own the property either. What is most disappointing with these properties is that the owners first did not meet the obligation to pay taxes on the property they own, only to follow that by leaving a lot and structure which is not maintained in accordance with the ordinance nor in respect to their neighbors, Eisenhower said. We are disappointed when owners do not take responsibility for their property and wish all took accountability for what they owned, he added. Schnell, too, said the point of the signs, which cost $3 each for the post and sign, are to let neighbors know why the properties aren't being mowed by the city and for neighbors to possibly mow it themselves or find out the owner and maybe through some more residents reaching out to them, see that maintenance is performed. The plan is to keep the properties posted. It doesn't take a great deal of effort, Schnell said, adding that then they won't have to reinstall signs later on. Due to budget cuts of auxiliary employees for mowing lots, the city only contracted the mowing of the city-owned lots. There are more than 240 abandoned lots the city doesn't own and isn't mowing this year as it has in the past. City officials have said they received phone calls from residents concerned about tall grass causing visibility problems on some streets. The city has mowed those properties. Okay, the next story is titled, The 1970s Music, Quirky Cast, A Recipe for Disaster. This is written by Mary Wyckoff in Danville. And there is a picture from left to right of Craig Smith portraying scientist Professor Ted Schneider, Nicole Miller portraying Jackie, a performer, Jason Assad portraying Lazarus casino owner Tony, Kayla Dillman portraying Marianne, a reporter, and Brian Jenkins portraying Chad, a ladies' man, will perform on In Disaster, the musical for the Beef House Dinner Theater, opening July 14th. Imagine controlled chaos on floating casino with a backdrop of catchy tunes from the 1970s and a cast of quirky characters. That sums up Disaster, the musical, a Beef House Dinner Theater summer production. It's really fun and clever, director David Woodrow said. It's one of those shows where you love every song that pops up next. The musical is a spoof of classical disaster films such as Earthquake, The Poseidon Adventure, and The Towering Inferno. Evening shows at 8 p.m. EDT time will be this Friday and Saturday, and July 21st, 22nd, and August 5th. Matinee shows at 2 p.m. EDT time will be Sunday and July 19th, 20th, 23rd, and August 6th. The show features a 22-member cast of Dinner Theater veterans. Among the passengers on the ship are Lazarus casino owner Jason Assad, a scientist Craig Smith, a disco diva Christian Cunningham, an aging showgirl Nicole Miller, a feminist journalist Kayla Dillman, a nun Keenan Clark, a lovable Jewish couple with a secret, Tom Frick and Julia Megan Sullivan, a couple of playboys ready for a good time, Brian Jenkins and Andrew Davison, and a millionaire, Nathan Henderson, and his wife. Newcomer Corey Talbot is featured in the dual role of Ben Lisa. The ensemble includes Katie Weston, Madison Thompson, Emily Hoskins, Courtney Hart, Alania Ali, Lizzie Lerner, Bree White, Justin Manicus, Caleb Medina, Carter Malati, and Christian McKinney. The musical also features more than 25 songs such as Knock on Wood, Hooked on a Feeling, Feelings, Hot Stuff, I Am Woman, and Sky High. Julia Megan Sullivan, who portrays half of a couple celebrating an anniversary, is excited about the 70s music, which brings back memories. If you love this music, it's worth it to come to the show, she said. She and Frick sing Still the One. The music celebrates the 70s, including soft rock and hot disco, she said. It's so much fun, she said, of the show, describing it as well controlled chaos. It's like a disaster film. It has to feel chaotic. Yet, at the same time, the audience needs to follow all of the threads. A reporter whose ex-boyfriend is on the ship, a fading disco star hoping for a marriage proposal that night, and a nun with a gambling addiction, among others. There are a lot of things to keep up with, plus the ship is falling apart, Sullivan said. Woodrow noted there are little tributes from the 70s, such as references to Gilligan's Island. You won't catch all of them, but when you do, you'll recognize them, she said. Sullivan has been with Beef House Theater for more than 21 years, was in its first production, Grand Night for Singing. The tunes from Disaster underscore the age difference between her and young cast members who don't recognize the 70s numbers. It makes me feel older, she said jokingly. She complimented the other cast's vocal range. I've never been in a show that comes together so vocally, Sullivan said, giving credit to music director Jennifer Woodrow. It's so much fun to give to sing with such incredible vocalists. When we come together, it's amazing every time. A dream. The jukebox musical, Life Could Be a Dream, is the other Beef House summer musical with songs from the 50s and 60s. Evening shows will be, these are all EDT times, at 8 p.m. July 28th and 29th and August 4th at the Beef House Banquet Center. Matinees will be at 2 p.m. July 26th, 27th, and 30th, and August 2nd and 3rd. The entire season is choreographed by Merritt Spicer and directed by the Woodrows. FYI, tickets for Disaster the Musical are $45 and include buffet dinner, show, beverage, salad, rolls, dessert, and cookies. For reservations, visit www.beefhouserolls.com or call 765-793-4770. The Beef House Dinner Theater is located at Interstate 74 at Exit 4 near Covington, Indiana. Doors for evening shows open at 6 p.m. with an 8 p.m. show, and the matinees, the doors open at 12:30 p.m. with a showing at 2 p.m. Okay, the next story is titled Young Inventors Camp Launches Creativity. This is written by Carol Roem in Danville. And there's another picture of Safira Shooter, Dasani Lewis, Kendall Corley, and Brooks Muniru. It's M-U-N-I-R-U. Figure out how to wire a buzzer and a switch during camp invention Wednesday at Mark Denman Elementary School. More than 100 youngsters from Danville's elementary schools will create alarm boxes from recycled electronics and launch water rockets this week. These activities and more are part of the week-long Camp Invention, a summer enrichment program at Mark Denman Elementary School that inspires creativity and inventive thinking in children in first through sixth grade. A similar camp, Project Invention, was held for seventh and eighth graders at the same time. Ground zero for inventing was the elementary school's library, also known this week as the Take Apart Room. There, campers took apart non-working machines and devices to investigate their inner operations and scoured tables full of old parts from broken electronic gadgets to find just the right ones with which to build their spy gadget alarm box. Girls and boys alike said they enjoyed taking apart the old electronics. I helped take apart a DVR, fourth grader Safira Shooter said. Another fourth grader, Brooks Muniru, said, I helped two other people take apart an Xbox. On Wednesday, Safira and Brooks were two children in a group that had to figure out how to make a buzzer work by flipping a switch. The group was given some wires, alligator clips, a battery, a switch, and a buzzer. The youngsters had to determine where to start in creating a complete circuit. They had to start with either the buzzer or a source of energy. On their first try, the buzzer sounded all the time and wasn't being activated or shut off with the switch. The children, however, were undeterred and figured it out by the end of the activity. I like making stuff from parts, incoming fourth grader Matthew Shearman said. Fourth grader Wisdom Lipscomb said her favorite activity so far during the camp was Duct Tape Billionaire. You have to make stuff out of duct tape and sell it to make a profit, she explained. My group is making a bag. Nearby, Boston Rogers, another incoming fourth grader, said his favorite part of the camp is playing games and launching water balloons. Invention is the purpose of the camp, which is being offered for the fourth year in Danville District 118 and emphasizes engineering and entrepreneurism. Camp Director Lori Woods, a Danville High School math teacher, said, the theme of this year's camp is launch. It's all about launching stuff. The camp lived up to its theme on Wednesday, with groups of children going outside to launch water balloons. Another activity, which took place after Wednesday's lunchtime, entailed having the campers draw and color in boxes on giant grid paper to mimic how pixels look. As they design on the grid paper, they're practicing how pixels form a picture, Wood said. As the boxes get smaller, they see the pictures get more precise. They are learning to manipulate boxes and spaces, camp assistant Matt Thompson, a third grade teacher at Mark Denman, said. The activities offered during the week-long camp include Duct Tape Millionaire. Campers design and construct accessories from duct tape and explore patents, hear how to launch a business and present their products to mock investors. Mission space makers. Children go on a mission to locate and prepare a new planet for human habitation. Teams are challenged to design inventions that transform the atmosphere, terrain, and ecosystem of an exoplanet. They set up a space lab to hatch eggs and grow crystal trees, take on jobs of tomorrow, and explore beyond the galaxy. Have a blast. Children fling, fly, and float through high-energy air battles while using psychics to boost their advantage. Children engineer a variety of working tools, including snowball throwers, a giant air cannon, and more. Everyone builds their own high-tech bubble blaster with flashing lights to take home. Operations keep out. Children create the ultimate spy gadget alarm box to keep treasures secure. They must decode a note written in invisible ink to find a missing tool, use spy glasses to catch a toy thief, and discover that both spies and engineers write in secret codes. 15 leadership mentors who are DHS students or recent graduates also helped facilitate the activities at Camp Invention for the younger campers. Camp Invention will wrap up Friday with a one-hour inventors showcase during which campers will show off their projects. Okay, now we'll run through the obituaries. Norman G. Mullins, 84, of Rossville, formerly of Georgetown, passed away at 3:30 a.m. Wednesday, July 12th at Watseka Healthcare in Watseka. A celebration of Norman's life will be held at 12 p.m. on Friday, July 14th at Sunset Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, 200 East West Street, Georgetown, with Richard Huber officiating. Visitation will be held 10 to noon on Friday prior to his service at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest in McKendree Cemetery. Memorial donations may be given in his name to Danville Humane Society. Robert W. Brandt, 81, of Danville, passed away at 1:50 p.m. Saturday, July 8th. A celebration of life service will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday, July 14th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Burial will be in Spring Hill Cemetery in Danville. Visitation will be held on Thursday, July 13th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made to the Danville Lutheran School. Ruth Ann Drummond, 77, of Lafayette and formerly of Covington, Indiana, passed away at 4:20 a.m. EDT time on Monday, July 10th at Franciscan Health Lafayette East in Lafayette, Indiana. Cremation was accorded. A celebration of life and gathering of friends and family will be held Saturday, July 15th from 1 to 3 p.m. EDT time at Stringtown Church of God, south of Covington, Indiana. Burial of cremains will be private and held at a later date at Coral Creek Cemetery, south of Covington, Indiana. Diverter Funeral Home in Cayuga, Indiana, is assisting the family with arrangements. James Milton Zorns, 84, of Danville, passed away at Provena Hospital on July 7th. A celebration of Jim's life will be held on Saturday, July 15th at 10 a.m. at Sunset Funeral Home in Danville. Visitation will be held on Friday, July 14th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, Robert's family has requested that a donation be made to the charity of your choosing. Tony Michael Jack, 71, of Danville, passed away at 1:36 p.m. on July 8th at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, July 14th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Miles Clark will officiate. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation from 5 to 8 on Thursday, July 13th at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to Danville Humane Society, 1225 North Colette Street, Danville, Illinois, 61832. John Jack A. Balsley left this earth on Monday, July 10th at Presence United Samaritans Hospital with the family by his side. Visitation will be from 10:30 a.m. to noon on Friday, July 14th at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East Williams Street in Danville. Services will be at noon at Pape's with Pastor Bob Arnold officiating. The family has requested, in lieu of flowers, contributions to be made to the American Parkinson's Disease Association or Central Christian Church. Frances Mildred Birch Milligan, 83, of Kingman, went to be with her Lord and Savior on Monday, July 10th, at Union Hospital in Clinton, while surrounded by loving family. Family will receive friends from 4 to 8 p.m. on Friday, July 14th, at Sanders Funeral Care, 203 South 1st Street in Kingman. Funeral services will be Saturday, July 15th, at 11 a.m. at the funeral home, with Pastor Don Hatfield officiating. Burial will follow at Kingman Fraternal Cemetery. Sanders Funeral Care entrusted with care. And Ronald Billingsley, 68, of Rossville, died at 5:20 a.m. on Friday, July 7th, in Rossville. Memorial services will be at 2:30 on Saturday at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hoopston. Visitation will be from 1:30 to 2:30 Saturday at the funeral home. Okay, the next story is titled Blooms of Vermilion. Festival forecast favorable. Storms threatening Friday's warm-up act, but predictions call for sun over the weekend. This is written by Tracy Crane in Danville. As balloon meister of this weekend's Blooms Over Vermilion event, Joe Vincent doesn't dwell too much on the weather forecast. The former balloon pilot makes the final call on whether the field of 34 hot air balloons fly, and he cautions that conditions can change quickly. But the National Weather Service's outlook is looking good less than 48 hours before the first launch, set for 6:30 p.m. on Friday at the Vermilion Regional Airport. Today's forecast, rain and thunderstorms, doesn't bode well for the warm-up act, the Danville Boat Club's splash and dash over Lake Vermilion, starring a handful of balloon pilots. But by kickoff of the official Balloons Over Vermilion Festival at 3 p.m. on Friday, the outlook calls for mostly sunny skies, a high of 83, and winds of 5 to 7 miles per hour. Saturday looks promising as well. I've got to make the tough decision to fly or not to fly, and hope I do right, said Vincent, a Danville area business owner with about 20 years' experience in ballooning. Last year brought perfect conditions for tethered balloon rides, one of the event's most popular attractions. More than 350 people went up for a short ride, and some waited for 4 hours, said Tony Sandlin, a commercial pilot, balloon pilot whose business, Midwest Balloon Rides of Fishers, Indiana, offered paid rides in 2016. This weekend, Sandlin is bringing two balloons that will take patrons up about 80 to 100 feet above the airport grounds on Friday and Saturday nights between 6:30 and 10. We're hoping they will have the same experience, but they will not have to wait as long, said Sandlin, who has flown extensively in the U.S. and Canada, and even internationally, including the Middle East and Mexico. His balloons come with doors allowing people to walk into the basket rather than climbing over the side. That not only saves time getting riders in and out, but also enables those who can't physically climb into a balloon to enjoy the experience too. The festival's main attraction starts Friday night with the field of 32 regular shaped balloons and two specially shaped ones set to launch from the airport grounds between 6:30 and 7:30 p.m. Between 5:45 and 6:30 a.m. Saturday, the balloons will launch from various spots around the Danville area, depending on wind, and fly as close as possible over a target slightly southeast of the intersection of Poland Road and North Vermilion Street. And on Saturday night, the pilots are set to fly into the airport between 6:30 and 7:30 p.m. A balloon glow is scheduled for both nights beginning at 8:30. Vincent said his tiny part in this event doesn't begin until Friday, but he's thrilled he's part of it. It's a great gig, he said. Okay, the next story is titled County Continues to Monitor Budget Issues. It's written by Brendan Dennison in Danville. After the state of Illinois passed a $36 billion budget package last week, the Vermilion County Board continues to scrutinize how that will affect local revenue streams. as the Tuesday board meeting, Financial and Personnel Committee Chairman Steve Forrest said expenses for the county were tracking along as expected. He also said they spent a lot of time talking about revenues, which were looking good, with the exception of those funds that come from the state of Illinois. Hopefully the budget they passed last week, they're supposed to keep things where they should be, he said. We'll see how timely they are with sending those payments down with the various income taxes and sales taxes. Moran said they've been working with the Illinois Association of Counties as they go through the budget that was passed to see how it would affect the county. What we've learned, he said, is that the state is saying there's not going to be any reductions in our share of the state income tax from the state's fiscal year in 2018. Now the trick is we saw a reduction in FY17 from what we saw in FY16, he said, and it's a little bit hard to gauge because state's fiscal year is different from our fiscal year. Moran also said the state will apply a 2% administration fee on the county's share of sales tax, and that will lead to a slight reduction in revenue. He added County Treasurer Darren Duncan has been busy working on tax bills for the county, and will continue looking into how much of our share of state income taxes the county should receive from the last fiscal year. Moran also said at this point he doesn't think county departments should have to endure any budget cuts, adding it's also a work in progress. He also mentioned they're standing firm to a resolution passed by the board a couple of months ago to have no new non-personal spending and that all personnel spending will be measured with union increases. According to Moran, out of $11 million in yearly expenditures for the county's general fund, the county relies on about $7.5 million that comes from the Illinois Department of Revenue, so the state can really mess with us bad, he said. Okay, just a couple minutes left here, so we'll do a quick sports story titled Update. Dan's Win Streak Snapped, written by Chad Dare in Danville. Matt Crook spent two full seasons behind the plate at Danville Stadium. The former Danville Area Community College standout played a key role in the Quincy Gems snapping the Danville Dan's win streak at six games late Wednesday night. Crook went 1-for-3 with an RBI single that proved to be the difference in the 3-2 win for the Gems, but it was his throwing arm that completely neutralized the Dan's running attack. Danville, which leads the Prospect League with 107 stolen bases, had three base runners thrown out trying to steal in the second game of a doubleheader, as the Dans were held to two runs in the seventh inning contest. Matt did a good job behind the plate, said Danville manager Eric Coleman of Crook, and who was on the Dans roster last summer. We couldn't get our running game going. I also thought their pitchers did a good job against us. Teams know that we are going to run, and it was one of those nights where we just came up short. Crook, the native of Monticello, said and a senior-to-be at Davenport University in Grand Rapids, Michigan, gave Quincy 11-27 a 3-0 lead with a two-out RBI single in the fourth. We battled until the last out, but we couldn't get the job done, Coleman said. Now we have to bounce back tonight against Terre Haute and start a new winning streak. Quincy is now 5-7 against Danville, and the Gems are 7-20 against the rest of the Prospect League. With a doubleheader split, Danville won the opener 5-3. The Dans are alone in second place in Prospect League's West Division. Lafayette currently leads the division with a 20-15 record. Danville is next at 20-18, and Springfield is third with 19-18. The two top teams qualify for the Prospect League playoffs. So that'll be it for today, Thursday, July 13th, 2017. I hope you all have a good week and try to get out there to see those balloons this weekend. Sounds like it'll be a really nice time. So have a good week, and I'll see you next week. Take care. Bye.